Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 131. After taking off last week, we're back to talk news. We're actually going to forego most of our impressions this week just because we have a time crunch. And speaking of, we're joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And Samuel.
Hi, I'm going to give impressions. Dwarf Fortress is hard, never play it. Yeah, Chivalry is fun, do play it. All right.
Okay.
Now that section's out of the way.
Rapid fire impressions, there we go.
Of two really old games that aren't at all relevant anymore.
Games are, I've always hated that attitude, and I don't mean new person. It's just like video games are really kind of, we build them up until they come out, and then we ditch them once they're out and move on to the next thing. I mean, like, this week alone, we had the release of Castlevania and something else, and nobody talks about those anymore. I mean, part of it, I assume, is because nobody's playing Castlevania, but...
Video games is a very, by its nature, it's very disposable as a medium, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, I'm not really with movies. I don't really watch movies twice. I don't really think about movies too much after I watch them once.
I was about to say movies are similar, but I think the major difference between movies are they tend to have more life shelves, longer life shelf, because they have the initial theatrical run. Then when they come out on DVD and Blu-ray, usually around Oscar season, there's big talk about it. If today's the Oscar, as we're recording that, and that's kind of bringing up discussion of a lot of old movies as well. And then usually, dependent on the popularity of the movie and how social media is feeling, it has a thing when it's on TV at the same time and people watch it. Especially, I know the UK's big for this because there was a time, like every Sunday, Harry Potter would trend because they were showing a different movie every week. People would watch it and talk about it. So movies do have that luxury of just having multiple avenues for you to kind of...
Well, mainly because it's not limited by technology. If you can store a file on it, there you go. You've got your medium for your movie. Whereas video games, they require specific technology to play. Like, I can't just play A Link to the Past on just anything legally anyway. So
I think that's going to be a huge thing to look to in the future as far as video games preservation goes, because it's not a simple thing. Like, even movies, you know, as you upgrade formats, you know, like, you can't pay a VHS on your Blu-ray player, but usually they bring that forward and you can get a Blu-ray version of that. And, you know, video games,
what else you don't get in your Blu-ray player? Video game news.
Video game news. And I was going to segue into that before Sam interrupted me. As I was going to mention, as far as preservation of video games go, one of the bigger aspects, especially of this past generation, would have been online gaming. And that's going to be interesting to see how that kind of goes in the future. And part of the reason I bring this up is because Nintendo announced this week that they are shutting down servers for the Wii and DS, Nintendo Wi-Fi service, which was
and
very...
three people shed a single tear.
But I was surprised because, like you mentioned, a lot of people joked about the fact that we had no online games. So Nintendo announces this, and people are upset because they can't play these online games they didn't care about to begin with.
Right.
Well, the thing is, it seems to be like, I don't understand why this has always been the case, but like, the only thing that really people are going to miss is all that online functionality for Pokemon. I mean,
I think
a lot. The GTS is still used quite a lot. On the old games, still, and obviously that's not going to happen come May time.
Yeah,
and
I think
you also got to buy the new Pokemon games, and you can trade your Pokemon up to the new Pokemon game. So from Nintendo's perspective, there's no reason to keep supporting trading in those.
Yeah,
especially if it costs them money.
Yeah, and I think part of it, and I, you know, this is speculation because Nintendo announced this, but part of it does seem to be that it's partially because it wasn't a Nintendo thing. Their servers are run by GameSpy, and GameSpy was bought out last year. And the company that's doing that apparently is kind of either nixing those contracts or they're not re-upping them for certain companies, so it might have been part of that. And, I mean, looking at the time, and it might work because this would be, I believe it's exactly 8 years and 6 months, which if you have, like, an internet provider or, you know, like, our website's on a six-month cycle, and it seems to be perfectly at the end of their six-month cycle of payment, so it's probably either out of their control or something, or a bigger asking price or something that a lot of people use. On that note, I am disappointed in the fact that they, and not necessarily that Nintendo's closing it down. I don't really play Mario Kart Online or God knows Smash Brothers because that was awful. But it does speak to the larger problem. You know, like we've seen service shutdown. The Xbox shut down during the Xbox 360 reign. I think Sony announced last week or the week before that they should announce service for GT6 or GT5, I should say. EA shuts down their servers on like a 2-year basis.
And it's an even bigger problem when, I mean, this is quite pertinent because I'm playing PlanetSide 2 right now, and that game is only multiplayer. And it's a free-to-play game, so some people dump a lot of money into games like this, and once the game is not existent anymore, what have you gotten to show for that $100, $200, $300 you spent on that on the game that you really liked?
Yeah.
You know,
and that,
once
and
it's closed, nothing.
And that's going to be part of it. I mean, as people kind of pointed out, and you always get people on either side of the fence, part of the reason Nintendo can kind of do this, and it's not as bad, even though it's that they didn't charge you for it. Like, Microsoft is going to, like, can you shut down Xbox Live if people are paying $50-$60 a year for it? I mean, they are paying for a service
right.
that, yes, move forwards with the Xbox One, but you are paying for that service, and if you want to pay on the 360, you should have the option to, but should Microsoft continue to support that for 10, 20, 30 years? If it's going to be, like, five people paying, like, Call of Duty 4.
Yeah, I understand the cost versus rewards argument. Like, at some point, it does not make sense for businesses to do that, even though it's the quote-unquote moral thing to do. They're video games. At some point, you're not going to be able to play them online because somebody has to pay for it, for Xbox anyway.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to the preservation. I mean, like I'm thinking of it in terms of like multiplayer, but I mean, they're so with Nintendo because they didn't really do it this past generation. But going forward, stuff like DLC and patches, is that going to be inaccessible to people, consumers as well?
And you know, Nintendo also gets a little bit of a pass because all of their games support split screen. I can't think of a single Nintendo multiplayer game that does not support split screen, and Xbox does not quite have that.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's another big thing, is like none of, like all their games still function exactly how you bought it day one, it just won't have 9. What people did say, and I'm really kind of curious about this, is they announced DS games for the Wii U's Virtual Console. Like, will those games, when they come up, if they come up to the Wii U, will those have online functionality?
Oh, no. Not a chance.
No, they won't.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you, if they emulated it and used it. Because, I mean, the Wii U and the 3DS will obviously have their Nintendo Network set up, so we'll use those servers. But yeah, it's a crapshoot, and I understand why people are upset with it, and I completely get it. But it really is, I mean, especially when, you know, we've spent the last month, not us necessarily, but the industry has spent the last month talking about how Nintendo needs to make money or something. I assume part of this is a minor cost-cutting procedure. It's not really worth investing in if you don't have as many people paying it. The other cynical answer would be the fact that Mario Kart 8 comes out a week after this happens, and we have a new Smash Brothers this year. So you got to force an upgrade somehow.
Yeah,
I think it's more, I think the anger comes more at the idea of it, like, because, like, video games, preservation of the medium is a very big problem that we don't have a solution to it. Apart from, you can just download a ROM and play it in an emulator, which is, I can understand why some people wouldn't want to do it, because you know, you can't use a GameCube controller on your PC, you know, you can't hold a DS if you're playing it on an emulator on your PC, and I think that someone needs to somehow solve a problem like this. I mean, it's more elegant than emulators, because I can understand, like, there are games I want to play, like Link to the Past, for example, and I can't, because there's no... I mean, I could go out and buy a Wii U, but am I going to go out and buy a Wii U just for one SNES game?
I thought you bought a Wii, or you were going to buy a Wii.
I was going to, but I won't be able to download it off the store because by the time I get one, because there won't be an online store, because they're shutting it down.
No, they're not shutting down the online store. They're shutting down the online services. The store remains. There's three things that remain. I know the store remains exactly, though. That isn't being shut down.
Oh, is it? Well, okay. But, like, it's still a problem, because even, like, Pokemon Red, for example, there isn't anything that can play that legally right now that I can get hold of.
What?
I think that would...
Pokemon Red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can get Game Boy. It's not that hard to get.
I was gonna say, I think technically speaking, Nintendo's mentality is that they upgraded you with Fire Red.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah, but I can't play that on anything either unless I buy a Game Boy Advance.
You sure?
And yes.
But I'd say, I thought you could download it. I thought that was on the Virtual Console.
No, Pokemon game is on the Virtual Console. And from what they said, it sounds like they don't plan on doing any of them because they don't know how to handle the trading aspect.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you how to handle the trading aspect, Nintendo. You don't handle the trading aspect. You just fucking...
Then you can't beat the game. You can't get all the Pokemon. It is physically impossible.
It's just an example. There are plenty of games out there that, you know, that are hard to get hold of, very hard to get hold of, and people don't have a way of preserving them, especially when you have Nintendo and their region locks on their newer systems, so I can't import if I wanted to.
I'm not disagreeing with you, and like I said, I think video game preservation is a huge part of it, and this is something that I think will come up later on the site as far as we work on one of our projects that we plan on doing sometime within the next month or two.
Or it could be 4 or 5 or 7.
Who knows? But yeah, it's a huge part of it because, I mean, it's like, even kind of going back, a lot of this stuff isn't even video game related as well, because there's certain games, just because of how licensing works, that are in the hands of multiple houses and stuff like that. And like an example, and a lot of people always ask, GoldenEye 64, is that has so many parties at play that it's really kind of hard for it to kind of come back. And like, to Daniel's point, you can only play it on N64, which wasn't the best selling system of all time, so it's not like there's, you know, there are millions of them out there, but they, you know, it's a rare thing. Nintendo doesn't
sell. You say that, I've got two in my house. I was a big, everybody I knew was Nintendo 64 kids. I only knew one person with a PlayStation 1, but that may have just been my area.
That was
my age group, probably more likely.
I was going to say that the PlayStation, I believe, outsold the N64 at 2-1. Apparently, Sam just didn't make the right friends, but yes.
I had Super Smash Brothers. That was fine.
Yes, and I guess in the sense of preservation, and this is nothing I enjoy talking about, but it happens, and it happens way too often. We also had two kind of major layoffs this past, 2 weeks. We didn't get to have a show last week. The first one was Irrational, which closed the entire studio down. A 200 plus team house, I believe, and 15.
It's now 15.
Irrational Games is closed down. The 15 are moving over to a different studio.
It's still called Irrational, though.
I thought it wasn't mean called that.
I think they're, I'm going to check. I'm going to double fact check here, but I think they're going to keep the Irrational name.
See, I feel like that would be the ultimate douche move. I guess what I was saying, the story is that Ken Levine, not the story, but how they presented it was Ken Levine was like, you know what, I'm kind of done with the AAA development team. I want to do a smaller game, so I'm taking 15 people and going to create a team that works on, it sounds like, more digital titles, which made it like, I'm bored with this, so I'm going to have 200 people lose their jobs so I can do what I need to do, which was a terrible way to present it.
Yeah, but again, I think it's funny that people blame Ken Levine for this, like it's his fault, like he was the one that said he had to fire people.
Yeah, but like I said, again, it was how it was presented, and it did kind of come off that way.
I think it's the fault of a couple of things. I mean, Ken Levine, I'm assuming that he fought it, and obviously you can only fight so much before pissing off the people above you.
Especially when BioShock Infinite didn't sell as well as they'd hoped.
I think that's what Daniel was going to get into.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, it's kind of a problem when you have a game that takes, 5-6 years to make, and they had to redo it a couple of times, and it doesn't sell as well. Here's what I don't quite understand is if they're trying to keep on as many people from Irrational as possible.
They didn't like that.
Well,
they're keeping down the important people from Irrational, not as many.
They said that they were going to see if they could send people that got laid off from Irrational into other 2K studios.
Okay, got it.
So, you know, if they're keeping these people, like, wouldn't it make more sense to have these people just form a new studio to do something else? Because they already have a newish studio doing something to do with Microsoft.
But well, none of them have been project leads, arguably.
Well, I mean, you can find a project lead. I mean, this is...
That's true.
Yeah, but the guy who did one level, he was a level designer for one level in the original Bioshock, was the project lead for Bioshock 2, and that turned out pretty well.
Right? So, I actually think so, too, but a lot of people will disagree with you.
Well,
and, yes.
Well, I was going to say, clearly, Take-Two does not seem as much in the... Like, it's hard to say, and this is part of the issue with the video game design, and this isn't really any industry. Ken Levine was the face of that company, and we don't know what anybody else did on that team, and maybe Take-Two didn't either. Who do you keep and who do you let go of? Because you have to imagine that part of the problem with the game was Ken Levine, but it was other people. It did take 5 years to make, has to be restarted several times, and from Take-Two's perspective, it's probably not wise to keep on investing in that studio. It's not necessary that Bioshock didn't sell well. It sold over 4 million copies, which is really decent.
Yeah,
it's the fact that would that justify another investment like this? Because you have to pay these people, for the past year to work on, I assume, nothing, because we didn't hear about any games being canceled when they were
right.
They've been working on
Bioshock. They were doing DLC.
Yeah, and even if you pay, how many people do you need? Do you need 200 people to make DLC for a game for a year?
Yeah.
And even the DLC wasn't timely.
Yeah.
Or particularly great, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, so it's one of those cases where...
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't,
yeah,
really.
We always kind of mention this, and people, sometimes you have to cut your losses, and this is kind of what they were doing. It makes no sense for them to have this company around who probably won't produce a game for another 3-4 years, and that game may not sell, especially when you're kind of doing a jump to next gen.
I think it makes perfect sense for them. By the way, the quote is, "I am winding down Irrational Games as you know it," which makes me think that they're going to keep the Irrational name.
I wouldn't, because I think that's going to, when you come out with a game in a year or two, that's just going to bring up bad memories for people.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to take out of this is more the fact that AAA development is obviously not what it once was, and it's becoming a business model that the volume that people publishers are churning out these AAA games is becoming not viable anymore.
Happened 6-7 years ago.
Because everybody now is expecting to do Call of Duty numbers, GTA 5 numbers, and that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think this is a problem we've talked about for years on this show.
It's very telling that this happens when Cliff Bleszinski, not long after Cliff Bleszinski, says that he's never going to ship a game in a box ever again.
Well, to be fair, Cliff Bleszinski is like quote unquote out of game development at this point, still, right?
I don't know with him, but he does have his... And yeah, it's something we've mentioned before. It's like this is an unsustainable model. Not because it doesn't sell well. They do. It's that people have these expectations that isn't making back money, and nobody seems to be in control of that. I mean...
People are putting too much money in the games and expecting too much out of them, and...
Yep.
Like, it came out... There were two studios this week. I think the first is Starbreeze, who were like after the success of Payday 2, which made them make $10 million, and I think the another game, I forget. Brothers. They are making money. Like, that's it. It's like a $10 million. They're making money, and Bioshock selling 4 million copies at $60 a piece, which is making hundreds of millions of dollars, isn't a sustainable model. And the other, and then, this is why we're seeing the rise of indies, is like an indie developer were asked why they're doing an exclusive for the Wii U, and they're like, if you're a big AAA development, 5-10 million makes a huge difference, but when you need to sell 100, 200,000 units, it's not really that big of a difference to us. And that's kind of the point. It's like, we don't have that middle ground anymore where people sell between 500,000 to a million units and break even and turn a profit. It's you have to sell 10 million day one.
Right.
To be viable. And it has to be a brand. It has to be something that you can DLC, you can make sequels to, you can make spinoffs to. And if it's not, it's kind of cut off. So it's a very bad model, and I think we're kind of seeing the pains of it now, because we do have a lot of interested new IPs signed up this year. We have Evolve, we have Destiny, we have...
Let's see how many of them make it to next year.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. It's like... I'm sure some of them will do well, and then what you're going to start seeing is, like, we already have, like, you can put it on your calendar without it being announced. We already have Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, FIFA, Madden, NBA 2K, WWE, you know, 2K. Those are already holiday titles that we put in every year.
Halo something now at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So how much more room do you have for other games to kind of go into that bubble? And because it's kind of, you know, like, Call of Duty still sells massive numbers. Madden sells massive numbers. FIFA sells massive numbers. After a while, you're just kind of having all these games that take all the sales all hit within the same 3-month period. Like, the rest of the year, like, you have spread out, but, you know, people aren't ready for it. Like, when do you do this? And I'm curious to see what's going to happen over the course of the next year or two.
Yep.
And, I mean, just to prove
all free-to-play is what's going to happen in the next year or two.
Oh, Jesus.
I was about to say, just to prove that this isn't
you
just...
You think I'm being sarcastic. I'm not.
No, I see I don't think we have this in news, and this is more for mobile, but it's the same thing that came out with free-to-play, is that it's a really tough model as well, because I think there's something like 0.15%, not 1%,
yeah,
like 0.15% of people who play free-to-play games actually invest money into them.
Yeah,
so,
they invest a fuck ton of money.
Yeah,
no, that's not what you read was 0.15% pay for 50% of free-to-play games.
Okay.
Not,
okay.
So they pay for the majority of it. That's not the number of people that pay for free-to-play
but
games.
But still, that's insane if the fact that you have to depend on a small portion of your audience to pay for it. And there's no workaround because we've seen people who are, I'm personally speaking a free-to-play person who tends to, pay on a free content, and if I have to wait, I'll wait. I'll play another game that's free to play in the interim while you're cooling down.
I'm playing PlanetSide 2, and I'm not planning to put any money into it whatsoever.
Well, I never plan to put money into free to play games, but sometimes it does happen.
And here's why. I mean, and now I know of a lot of people that have this mentality. I know it's probably not the majority. Maybe yes, I don't know. But whenever I play a free to play game, I start playing it, and then I sort of wait for the moment where the game's telling me that it's fucking me over unless I pay money. Like, it's just that moment of when are you going to screw me over? And in Loadout, I mean, I like Loadout, but that game's progression is colder than the goddamn Arctic snow. That's how fucking glacial it is. And I can't deal with that. And I'm not paying the equivalent of, like, if I was to pay for an EXP boost for every month, I would be paying the same amount as I would be if I was subscribed to The Elder Scrolls Online. And I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. You know? The same goes for PlanetSide 2. I looked at the subscription options and I was like, no, I'm not subscribing to this. I'd rather just... What I've got by playing nothing is completely fine. You know? I'm not going to have, like, the amazing epic... The battles are not going to be any more epic if I put money into it, so I'm just not going to bother.
Yeah, I think...
What happens if this game goes away? All that money is gone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's I was going to say, I think the other thing is, I mean, personally speaking, I kind of see free-to-play as really extended demos. Like, oh, I just need something to pass the time, and we download something that I don't have to pay for until something I want comes out. And again, I'm not, you know, that may not be a majority viewpoint, but, you know, like we said, if half of your money is coming from a very small portion of people who actually play the games, it means you have to hook thousands of people in hopes that two or three really take to it.
And those two or three people could just vanish.
Yeah.
At any time.
Yeah, and that's a problem. And, you know, this is why we've kind of seen, you know, mobile companies pop up and they make it big and then they disappear right just as quickly. I was talking, you know, we had Flappy Birds recently, but before that we had Draw Something, Words with Friends. All these games that were big and talked about for, you know, a couple of weeks and then you don't hear about them anymore because everybody just kind of moves on at once and their friends get something else that they're talking about and that's where you go. And I think, you know, that's going to be the problem with free-to-play. It's like, it makes the barrier to entry extremely low, which makes it very easy for people to migrate in bulk. Where it's not like Call of Duty where you spend $60, so you're going to get your money's worth and you're going to pay with friends because they're not going to do anything for another year because they're not going to buy a $60 game next week as well and then tell you to buy that $60 game and then you buy the next one the week after and stuff like that. So yeah, I was going to say to share that this isn't limited to third-party developers. Sony also let go about 50 people from Sony Santa Monica, and word out of that is that they also canceled a new IP that was in the works.
I expect more Gears of War, God of War.
Same thing.
Well, I was
pretty much at this point.
I was personally surprised that they let go of people because heaven knows they at their studios run ramshot with development. I mean, look at the Asgardian. I would have canned and fired that team ages ago.
I think they have multiple times. To be fair, I bet you the team still working on Last Guardian is not the same team that started working on Last Guardian at all.
That may be the case, but why keep on making it?
Yeah, I don't know.
At some point, you're going to have to say, we're not going to be able to...
I think they're lying to us. I don't think Last Guardian has ever been a game.
They made
a pre-rendered scene once and said, hey, we're just going to keep stringing you along. Have fun.
Oh, I absolutely think, and there are a lot of games that are shown without any type of proof of concept that just say, we'll show you this game and we'll try to find a way to match this vision. Because even the two or three times they've shown the Asgardian, I still have no idea what type of game it is.
Yep.
Killzone 2, they were just like, oh, this is what we think it could have been, and it turned out to be nothing like that at all.
Yeah, and it's not misleading people, it's just like, oh, we're going to show this game, and then we have to find a way to make this game. And that's a problem. I mean, it's the same thing, and I guess we'll see this year at E3, it's the same thing. Like, I'm personally kind of excited for Sunset Overdrive. But at the same time, I know Microsoft showed absolutely nothing of the actual game when they revealed it. And you just have to hope that
Insomniac don't focus test the crap out of this game.
Yeah, I was about to say, we'll see what happened with Overstrike or Fuse. Like I said, I was really surprised that they fired people because Sony just... And I've always said, you know, I appreciate what Sony does, you know, they give their studios creative freedom and stuff like that, but I also think it's a terrible business if you give your studios 3, 4, 5 years to make a game and not kind of have some type of effort to say, okay, you know what, you need to scale this back, you need to calm down, you need to get this ready to go. Like, it works out for them a lot of the times, Uncharted, The Last of Us. At the same time, we've seen Sony close down a ton of studios this past generation. The people who made PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, the people who made Starhawk or Warhawk, whatever it was. Heavenly Sword didn't go anywhere. Genji, Gainji, whatever that giant enemy crab stuff was.
The giant enemy crab went to Borderlands. I heard. They have a boss that makes fun of the giant. It's a giant enemy crab that has weak points that you hit for massive damage, and they make. Anyway, I thought it was funny.
Yeah,
completely derailed your point. But
my point is, like, I appreciate Sony. You know, as far as a publisher goes, they are fantastic. They give you free reign. You know, you're able to make different. You know, you aren't forced to make sequels to your games that are popular. You're given as much time as you need. And it's great. It's the boss that everybody loves. It's the boss that, you know, you want to hang out with, you want to grab a beer with. It's not the boss that necessarily makes the company the most money.
And they need
It's the boss that has the workforce to have the least to do the least work.
Yeah, it's the
not
boss.
I'm not saying they don't do any work, but they don't produce results a lot of the time.
We've mentioned The Last of Us was successful for them last year, but you think of God of War Ascension, you think of Puppeteer, you think of Beyond Two Souls, you think of Tearaway, you think of Killzone Mercenaries, and there's a lot of games that underperformed them last year. A lot of games that underperformed them last year. Like, at some point, you're gonna have to be the boss who kind of gets stern and say, "Look, we appreciate what you're doing, but we're going to have to make a concentrated effort to actually make sure these things turn a profit." Because people always talk about how Microsoft buys up studios and kills them down. Sony has closed down just as many.
Yeah, could be worse, could be EA.
It could, honestly speaking, I don't know why any company continues to go with EA. It's like they just see the money. Because EA buys, I don't know many companies that EA has bought that has survived the purchase transition.
No, yeah, exactly. And even then, I don't know, even those that have survived, and not many of them make good games anymore either.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with... I know they don't own Respawn or anything, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Or do they own Respawn? I can't remember.
They're just a partnership.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of like... Well, I mean, I guess it depends, because I was going to say it's like the same way BioWare was a partner, but they eventually ended up buying
BioWare. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the other thing, and this is just kind of funny, it's like Sony Santa Monica is one of those studios that kind of put out that they were hiring in the wake of the Irrational Games closure. So I can't imagine that's good news to say you laid off 50 people a week later.
Hey, guess where the jobs that we're hiring came from?
Yes. I guess we should move away from this. I really hate... It happens, and I hate it because it always sounds depressing, but at some point I hope the industry does get a wake-up call and say, like, you know what, this isn't something that we can continue to do without repercussions.
And here's the thing is, most industries realize that if you pump more money into things, you need to make that money back, and it's not a viable thing most of the time. Whereas the video game industry doesn't seem to understand that. I don't quite understand why.
Well, I think that's what they try. I think
Activision understands it just fine.
Well, even that's not true, because you don't have this in the news, but Call of Duty Elite was closed down, or is closing down, and that was a thing that they started up to kind of make extra revenue, and I guess it didn't take off. Like, people.
Yeah, but they're still making money on. I don't know. I think Activision is probably making, as bad as they are, they're probably the best from a business perspective publisher that exists.
I think from a business perspective, it might be Ubisoft. It's one of those two, though.
I think they do too many creative things. Like, their games are all fun. I don't think any of them sell gangbusters the way they'd like them to.
I mean, Assassin's Creed sells like 10 million. Yeah. Just Dance sells like 10 it's million.
I forgot about Just
Dance. They're the only two things, though. Like,
yeah, but I mean, Just Dance can't cost that much to make.
Yeah,
Just Dance is the perfect video game franchise.
I forgot that they own Just Dance.
Just Dance probably cost them. Like, all you do is upgrade music. It has silhouettes as back as dancers. So it's not like you're wasting money on graphics. It has no online.
And it comes out on every possible platform.
Yeah.
It's a fun game too, actually.
Yeah, it's a perfect cash cow for them. I assume it helps with them Assassin's Creed, and then they could Skyendis does no that's Activision. So they have those two, and that's really all you need. To experiment, and they do experiment a lot, which is why I give them a lot of credit. The one that always surprises me, because you would think they'd be in much better shape, is Take-Two. Because the years with Take-Two don't have, like, a GTA, they are really always on the ropes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What do you mean they're always on the ropes? They had Borderlands 2, which sold so many fucking copies, it's ridiculous.
Take-Two?
Take-Two owns Rockstar and 2K.
Yeah, you mean Gearbox.
No, they own Rockstar and 2K.
2K published
Borderlands 2.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, they're always on the rock somehow.
Yeah, because Max Payne. And,
I read an article about Take-Two. I can't remember what the exact subject was, but they've released a multi-million seller of a different IP once a year since 2007 or something. And it's because... and it's something to do with like how their investors don't seem to have any confidence in them because they don't seem to be pushing digital that much. But
no,
they just have to.
It's also because they don't make a lot of money. They make money, but I think part of it is because they have these games that have these 4 or 5 year development cycles, and when they come out, they make money. But you have to go through that cycle every time. So, like, Red Dead did well, GTA did well, Max Payne didn't do so well. But you think about the fact that those games are overlapping for a big part, and these have huge teams. They end up costing them a lot of money. Like I said, it's surprising because GTA is commercially the most viable game and brand.
Well, I think the part of that is because they don't release one that often.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's like for a company with so many success, it's surprising to see that they're always on the ropes.
Why do you seem to think that they're on the ropes? These are their stock prices over the last 5 years. That's pretty fucking good.
What is it?
It went from $6 a share in 2009 to $20 a share right now. That is a very, very big growth period. I don't see them as on the ropes like you seem to think they are.
Maybe I'm thinking of Rockstar in general then.
Maybe so.
Yeah, because there's one of them that's always up for purchase or buyout because they're, you know, they're losing a ton of money.
Because 2K always has, 2K usually has at least one game a year that does super well. And they also have games that have really long tail periods, like Civ 5, for example.
I was about to say, they also do well with their sports games. The NBA 2K was just remarkable. It's like a 10-month sell as well.
Yeah. So maybe, the only basketball game as far
so
as...
So they use... I think it's a case of they use 2K to sort of keep themselves afloat while they make these massive, huge projects like GTA 5.
So maybe it's Rockstar I'm thinking of then.
Yeah. Rockstar's basically living off the back of the money 2K makes.
Yeah. Which is good. I mean, if they keep making Grand Theft Auto games, you know. And hopefully a bully game, I'll keep my fingers crossed, even though I don't think that's going to be helpful for their financial situation.
Yeah. Well, who knows? I mean, at some point, I think we're going to have to... I don't know, because, I mean, kind of going back to Irrational and to Sony Santa Monica, my biggest beef with people kind of closing down these studios is the fact that they tend to get hired up by EA, Ubisoft, and they go to work on Assassin's Creed or Madden instead of kind of being put to work on something new. It's just like we need more manpower for our existing franchises. And it's either that or they end up going to mobile or digital. There's like no middle ground. And, you know, this has been the case for a while. I mean, also THQ, Midway, Acclaim, and all those other companies who made those mid-tier games really hurt. And it seems like we're just going bigger and bigger instead of trying to scale back and make more games that sell decently instead of one game that sells gangbusters.
Well, you also have taken into account that people are making less money than they used to, so there's way too much to take into account for that. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. I wish that more people... you do see indie studios rising with slightly more popularity than you did before.
Yeah, but I still think that there is... I think part of it...
A middle ground or something?
Yeah, a middle ground, especially, I think, because indie games are always going to have that hurdle to overcome, at least for the next few years, of visibility, because, like, you know, people use the stores, but it's not everybody uses the store. It's much different than if you went to a store, a GameStop or a Walmart, and you saw it on the shelves, and people picked it up randomly, or something like that. And digital sales...
Not to mention, if you're an indie company, you're much more at the, sort of... I don't have to word this, but you have to sort of rely more on a platform holder, because I know I was a couple of days ago, one of the guys at Vlambeer said that he, you know, they tried to get 3DS dev kits, but Nintendo wouldn't let them have them. It's like, I want to fucking play their games on my 3DS. Why can't I play them on my 3DS? Why won't you give them dev kits, you know?
There's also
things like that, whereas if you're a mid-tier studio, if you're being published by THQ, Microsoft and that would just go, yeah, okay, here's a dev kit.
Yeah, and that was a big problem with Microsoft this past generation, and even going into this generation, is like, but yeah, it's a huge thing. I mean, we've heard this from Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, you know, especially after like GDC, they have like these huge queues to get through, and it's not like you can just give everybody a dev kit. They have to, you know, check these people out. I mean, a lot of them have kind of scale back the requirements. I know last gen Nintendo had these, and like, you had to have a office space, and you had to sell a certain number of copies before you made any money. You got any money from them, and it's all these hurdles for an indie developer who isn't EA or Ubisoft, who has that luxury of saying, okay, we rent out a huge office, we can wait 5 months until our game sells 10,000 units or something to make money. When an indie developer, everything counts. I mean, and even Steam, which, you know, a lot of people, like, it still has a huge hurdle. Like, I was reading some indie developers talking about the various different platforms, and they said what happened with Steam is Steam isn't a consistent seller until you put up on a Steam sale. So it's like, yeah, you can be there, but if you're not featured on a Steam sale, if you don't have a Steam sale, you might not get recognized. People might not purchase your game.
Especially now that they're winding down the floodgates, as it were. And
I need to go study. Sorry, guys.
Okay.
I've been doing this for a little too long. Sorry, I feel really bad for cutting you off like this, but I made a 60 in the last finance test.
Okay, have fun with that.
Yeah.
Later.
See ya. Bye. Twitter's Neil. Fun stuff.
It's going to be especially hard for indies to sell on Steam, especially now they're talking about removing all the barriers to get into it. And I mean, I know I've looked at Steam lately and gone, there's nothing but crap here, you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of like that's the problem, you know. It's a twofold problem like you have with the App Store. It's like anybody can be a developer on that, but it makes it really hard to be visible. But you can't be at Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft and be really too strict, because then the barrier of entry becomes too high for certain developers. So there has to be a middle ground in there somewhere. And yeah. I assume the person who cracks it, like, you still have that issue of visibility. Because, I mean, I own a 360, I own a PS3, I own a Wii U, I own a 3DS. And I don't go to the shops that often. I don't really have reason to, if there's something major coming out or I hear about a sale. Like, I don't check every week to see what's new. Especially like on PSN, the only time I go on is when I have to redeem free games on PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, especially if you like the store's not designed to be visible, like the 3DS eShop, which I know there's good stuff on there because I own some really good stuff that's only on the eShop. But finding it is just impossible. There's not that much on there, and finding what is on there is just so hard.
Yes, yes, it is. I think they do a better job with the Wii U because it has a lot more screen space and they're able to divide stuff up. But yeah, it's still, and this is going to be a problem with all of them. I think Microsoft, I think, you know, as much as it was, I can understand why people would hate it. I think, you know, getting rid of everything and making it just the Xbox Live Arcade really is going to hurt, because before you had arcades, you had demos, you had indie games, and they were all kind of subdivided. At least you know where you could go to find it, and now it's just everything's under this banner because we don't want to make it. And I understand if you're an indie developer, you probably don't want to feel left out or, you know, shunned.
Well, I can understand, like, if they were to just roll the indie and the arcade together, but not the full price AAA digital titles.
Yeah. I mean, personally, yeah, we don't own an Xbox One, so maybe they do it better than that. But it does seem like it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, you're all just going to fight for attention on the service.
Yeah.
But yes, I guess I was going to say not to end on it. I guess we should be. This is just really quickie, and I just wanted to bring this up because I don't really support this, and I forget if we talked about this on the show. Warner announced that this week that the Batman Arkham Origins DLC Code Hard is coming out in April, and it's going to be a Mr. Freeze origin story, which is cool, but I already have my ultimate Mr. Freeze origin story. The reason I don't support this, as they noted a couple of weeks ago, is that they aren't patching the game anymore to focus on the DLC. And I hate the fact that they're like, oh, you already paid us, so we're just going to make you pay us more instead of fixing the game that you bought.
Especially when it's the most broken game of the series as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just really do something about that.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like it's a slap in the face, and I think it's how companies see consumers. It's like, we're money bags. We don't, you know, like, you bought a game, we don't want to waste any more money than we have to make sure it works, because you already bought it. And we're going to send you more content that you pay for. And the fact that they came out and stated that, and then like a week or two later show us off this DLC, is just like a huge slap in the face, I think. And I guess in happier news to kind of end this show, because it's been a real downer, Twitch says Pokemon beat Pokemon.
Pokemon Red. Yeah.
Pokemon Red. I don't know why I had a brain freeze on that. It took them maybe something close to 500 hours? Something like 452, I think?
16 days.
Yeah.
It was about 16 days, so whatever that turns out to be.
It's kind of
interesting, actually, because, like, as I've said, like, maybe it means that the infinite monkey theory has some merit to it.
That if you have enough... Yeah,
I'll find out.
Because I believe they beat the game in an anarchy mode.
Yeah.
A lot of people kind of turned against a democracy mode because it was against the initial vision.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah, and it didn't, like, even when they went to democracy, it has the same inherent problems. It's just much slower. Like, you get people who understand what they need to do, but you still have that 20-second input delay. So...
Yeah, so for anybody who's living under a rock and hasn't been awake for the last 2 weeks, someone, we don't know who, we don't know where, we don't know how, they managed to plug into the Twitch chat, and people were controlling a game of Pokemon Red just by typing in button prompts. So you type in up, and it feeds up into the system. Now, and imagine how crazy this would be if you would have, I don't know, maybe 65,000 people. I think the peak was around 100K
people. Yeah, I think it was 102,000 was the most I ever saw.
Yeah, 102,000 people doing it, potentially, not actually, but potentially 102,000 doing this all at one time, and you can kind of imagine how badly that goes and why it took 16 days for them to get to the end of the Pokemon League. I wasn't a fan of democracy mode because, like, the anarchy is the fun, and I mean, okay, there are parts of the game that are probably going to be really hard to get through in that pure anarchy, but that's kind of the beauty of it, you know. And I don't like, I mean, you can call me a hipster or whatever for this, but I don't like the fact that now it's sort of become a thing that's popular, that whoever runs it has just said, okay, we'll just do it again. Now that I'm charging you you can give me $5 a month, I'm going to just do it again, you know? Like, yeah. I would like to have seen a similar concept applied in a different way to a different type of game instead of doing it on Pokemon games.
You are getting other games that are doing it. It's not as popular, and I think part of it is that there aren't a lot of games that really work with it. RPGs make sense, maybe strategy games, but you can't do like an action game, you can't do like a platformer, you can't do a first-person shooter, and stuff like that.
But it's just sad to see. Oh, they're just doing it again, the same thing.
Yeah, I get it, but I feel like it kind of ran its course. Like, I might check this out once, you know. Part of the reason I enjoyed the Switch was just to kind of see how big of a jump it was between Pokemon Red and Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Yeah,
as far graphically, of course. And stuff like that, but it's kind of like, it's not, and I think this speaks to Gold and Silver as well. It's just not as fun the second time around.
Well, especially considering there was a small change that they made in Gold and Silver to the way the player moves, and it, because I've seen somebody try to do it, like, it wasn't very successful, it wasn't very popular. Somebody tried to run Twitch-based Pokemon Crystal, like, just not long after Red started, and the way the game works in Crystal, Gold, Silver, and Crystal, which didn't happen in Red and Blue, is if you're facing left, for example, and you just tap the right button, you face right, you don't move right. So in order to get in, so it's going to slow the game down just like that little bit, but that often. And, you know, and imagine how many people there are inputting different inputs. And that's the way the thing understands it, is it's just a tap. And so it's just going to face, if they're already facing in one direction and they go to a different direction is put into the system, it's going to face it. And that just doesn't look to the way the system's supposed to go, you know? I think the whole point of why Red and Blue, why Red, like, is because the game is really simple. And even between Red and Crystal, they've put in a whole bunch into the game that just kind of doesn't work so well with it. So, yes.
I don't think it's going to be as popular, and I hope they don't anticipate it to be, because you can do it once, and it's fun, it's novel, it's different, and now it's just kind of like a sequel. It's like, we've seen this trick before, and you aren't going to get people on board with it as much, and, you know, and you kind of already seen that with a lot of the human that comes out of it, where it's like, oh, they caught a Pidgey, the return of bird Jesus. It's like, it was fun the first time because it's kind of like everything was kind of on the go and stuff like that. And now it's like, again, this is how you have bad movie sequels. It's like, oh, it's just going to be self-referential to the first one because it was so cool and awesome. So here's bird Jesus again. And, you know, like, everybody gets
If you want to see the movie that is the epitome of that, if you want to see the movie of the epitome of that, let's just reference the first one. Birdemic 2. Everybody knows how bad the first Birdemic is, but you can kind of appreciate it and laugh at it because of how, like misguided the director was while making it. But Birdemic 2 is just like, oh, we made a terrible movie last time, let's make another terrible movie and everybody will love it. And it's just not good. You can't appreciate it. So yeah, my part of me kind of wants this to die off really quick, because I don't like the memes are kind of amusing the first time, like Bird Jesus as you mentioned, but now they're just
Yeah, it's kind of that's the thing. It's like being forced upon. It's like, ha, this is so successful. But at the same time, I guess I can't really say anything. As of right now, there are 79,000 people watching it, so...
Yeah, I guess it, things don't die off that easily.
There's a reason why we get trilogies. But yes, I think that's it for us this week. Hopefully by the time this goes up, and hopefully by the time we finish this, I am going to put up my list of top 7 licensed games, because South Park is coming out this week. So I figured it would be nice to get those.
Full of Cybertron better be in there.
I forgot to. I'll talk to you off air about that. For Sam, who stepped out early, for Daniel and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 131. Auf Wiedersehen.
There are loved ones in the glory whose dear forms you often miss. When you close your earthly story, will you join them in their bliss? Will the circle be unbroken by and by? By and is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky, in the joyous days of childhood. Oft they told of wondrous love, pointed to the dying Savior. Now they dwell with him above. Will the circle be unbroken by and by and by? Is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky. You remember songs of heaven which you sang with childish voice. Do you love the hymns they taught you, or are songs of earth your choice? Will the circle be unbroken by and by? By and by is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky. You can picture happy gatherings round the fireside long ago, and you think of tearful partings when they left you here below. Will the circle be unbroken by and by? By and by is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky. One by one their seats were emptied, and one by one they went away. Now the family is parted. Will it be complete one day? Will the circle be unbroken by and by? By and by is a better place.